It's another episode of Lit Up with Nina Alvarez. I'm your host, Nina Alvarez.
I am very happy to have Kate Royal on our show today. She is a playwright and also a director, native to Topan, New York, which is downstate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, closer to the city. Yeah.
Yes, is in the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Tappan Zee. All right. Yeah. Okay. She is the author of such works as Mammoth and The Nameless Days of Gumdrop Smith, which debuted at this year's Fringe Festival. Kate is a graduate of SUNY Geneseo 2013. Yes, she is right out of school and she's already doing amazing things. She has a bachelor's degree in theater / English. Is that like a double or?
It's sort of its own hybrid major at Geneseo.
Oh, Geneseo is amazing. Yeah. All right. And a minor in film studies. Her work as a director includes both original plays and well-known titles ranging from Romeo and Juliet to Neil LaPute's The Mercy Seat. In 2012, she was chosen as a directing assistant with the Berkshire Theater Group, where she worked alongside Tony Award-winning theater artists on the world premiere of Kelly Masterson's Edith. She is currently developing a play entitled Girls Can Tell, centering on the subject of campus sexual assault, which will premiere later this spring. Very exciting. Kate is a proud artist in residence at the Multi-Use Community Cultural Center, otherwise known as MUC to you Rochesterians. Most recently, she has been invited to earn her MFA in writing for the screen and stage at Northwestern University. Will she go? Won't she? She hasn't decided yet, but she has been asked. So welcome, Kate.
Thank you.
It's so great to have you here.
It's wonderful to be here. I'm very excited.
So I have Kate here for a number of reasons, but for the most prominent is that I just saw her play Mammoth last weekend. It was an amazing experience. I can honestly say Kate is one of my favorite playwrights. And this is, you know, and she's a friend. And so this isn't just bias, though. I really, she's going to be famous someday. So find her and get her autograph now while you can. But I knew Kate would probably also have some really interesting things to talk about her process of writing, directing, and producing the play, not just from a mechanical, technical sense, but from a sense of what I would call the spiritual or what you would call the intuitive aspects of the process. She's, you know, has a lot of a very thoughtful person. And that's, you know, ultimately what Lit Up is about. It's about those aspects of making art that are beyond our technical control and how to open ourselves up to them more to create even more profound work. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of ways we can approach this. And I'm just going to let Kate take the floor and talk about whatever comes to her mind first.
Sure. Well, with Mammoth, I'd say of anything that I've written, playwriting, poetry, or prose, Mammoth has definitely been the most personal writing process and the most personal story I've told insofar as I put the most of myself in the characters in this play. A lot of times I'll write with a distinct goal to separate myself and to write characters and write stories that are very foreign to my own experience, and in writing them, you know, try to understand other perspectives that are very different from my own. And that is true to a great extent in Mammoth, given certain elements of that plot obviously are not my own experience. But since beginning to write it, when I was the first kind of ideas for it came my sophomore year at Geneseo. I had written my first play, and it was very well received, and that was really a case of writing a play very different from myself. It was about a woman whose husband had died, and she was confronting a mistress. She discovered that he had had a mistress, and the play was this wife in her living room, and this mistress just, you know, having that conversation. And then kind of within that same year, as I decided that I wanted to focus more on playwriting, the ideas for Mammoth started coming about. And, you know, it started as I want to write my sibling play, because every playwright has their sibling play.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually, I was in New York recently, and I was getting coffee with the playwright Martina Mayoke, and I was describing the plot of Mammoth to her. And, you know, this play that I've devoted 4 years of my life to, and yeah. here she is as this, you know, very successful playwright. And she's like, oh, yeah, your sibling play. Everybody writes it. Everyone writes that play. And it was very refreshing to hear that,
okay,
actually.
Good.
But yeah, no, I was yeah. like, oh, okay. I thought, I know that's true. But anyway, so that was sort of the kernel of it. It was, I wanted to write a family drama. I wanted to write a one room, very kind of Aristotelian structured. We yeah. have this window of time where we just need to see these people.
One space, one unbroken segment of time.
Mm-hmm.
What was the third? There's Aristotelian structures, like time, space, and... Oh, no, I can't remember either.
Well,
just for our audience, that there is a third. If anyone wants to write in. It's not a Colin Joe, but
Dr.
you can,
Tom
you can write
Greenfield
in.
Is very disappointed in me right now that I can't come up with this.
Absolutely. Oh, wait, so... When you were writing, if I may ask, because I'm very curious about the mm-hmm. first play that you wrote about the woman who was a widow, obviously, you know, as a young woman in college at the time, nothing you had experienced before, was your process one of, I mean, I think all writers are empathic to a certain extent, even possibly psychic, you know, whatever that mm-hmm. means, to be able to embody experience that we've never ourselves had.
Mm-hmm.
Is your process like that, where you feel sort of taken over by a character?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I learned that by trying not to write that way. And with that play especially, that the idea for that play, it was called Other Women. And the idea for that was inspired by a true story that I'd heard from someone that my family knew. And that was kind of one of those moments in hearing that story. That was kind of my first moment of thinking, okay, yeah, I have no choice but to pursue writing in my life, because I heard this story that was so heartbreaking and so traumatic for anybody involved in that. And my first thought, beyond the human thought of, I can't even imagine what that's like to deal with, was, God, that would make a fabulous play.
Right.
Yes. You know, and there's that moment where it's sort of a dark realization in its own way, when you can step out of it and say, this would be a wonderful thing to realize on a stage or to put to paper. But with that play, and that was, yeah, and it was, this was experience that I could not even remotely relate to or wrap my head around. And that was the intrigue of it. That was
right.
what excited me about it. Of, I wanted that challenge, and I wanted that, yeah, that challenge of accessing that kind of experience of a woman that was much older than me, that had lived life in a way that I hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning, I had these things laid out plot-wise that I knew, all right, this is, she's going to, mistress walks through the door, then these are the points we have to hit
right.
to get to the climax and to get to the very sudden and falling action after the big buildup. I knew what I was building to the whole time.
Right.
And I was writing to those moments, and it wasn't coming out. It wasn't working.
Right.
And it was that moment of realizing I can't apply characters to a plot. It has to be the other way around.
Right.
And that was a huge moment for me as a writer of realizing that I had to kind of reverse the thought process that I had going in.
I think I've heard once something like, plot is the destiny of character, or something mm-hmm. like that. That's, I love the way you put that. It's, I know I have so many clients and, you know, aspiring authors
mm-hmm.
who, yeah, they try to aim their plots. Like, they're like, I want this and this and this to happen. And yeah, and all the characters end up serving it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and you can feel how wooden, how that doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, you have to allow the characters. I mean, Stephen King says this, you can't aim a plot like a cruise missile.
Yeah.
And he says, and plot is yeah. miles away from story as it's understood by the heart and mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, story is messy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always linear. It's not always clear. Things don't line up always, but they make sense on a different level.
Right.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. when you were writing her, were there moments where she said or did things and you're just like, wow, I didn't even know I knew that or I knew about that?
I don't honestly, with that play, that was one of those. I mean, talk about the intuition and those moments where it just hits you. That was a play that I struggled with and tinkered with and tinkered with. And there was one night where I can't remember what happened. I don't remember what it was, but there was one night at Geneseo. I think it was over some break, and I was sitting in my room and just something clicked, and I did the entire thing in a matter of a few hours. And it was just a total channeling of...
Right, a channeling. And I love that, because writers talk about channeling, and then people who aren't writers are like, what do you mean, channeling? Mm-hmm. But you don't have to be like a psychic or whatever, clairvoyant. We're just talking about that. It's something else.
Yeah. And I think with theater especially, theater artists, it's just different levels of conduit.
Yeah.
You know, the writer is... It doesn't start with the writer. It starts with the characters. And that is something separate from the writer. They are channeling the ideas and the people and the human stories that they're telling, and they're distilling it down into this specific scene and these specific characters. But you're the first, you know, point of contact for the larger ideas and the larger points.
I love the way you put that about the conduit.
Yeah, and it's all, and then it all, you know, it's a beautiful cycle that, you know, the humanity and the characters come through the writer brings it to the director, mm-hmm. and they channel their own interpretation.
That's true.
To the actor, who then has their own personal interpretations of the characters, and then it's delivered back out into the audience, and then they create and establish the humanity that the writer then is channeling. And it's this very beautiful circle.
That is beautifully put. And it's one of those things where, as writers, we hope to be able to channel. We wait to we basically have to be ready all the time for that moment.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that we just sit around and wait. And of course, there's lots of work. And sometimes you do have to do all the work and all the revision only to just finally start over knowing what you need to know.
Yeah. Well, and it's the British playwright Jez Butterworth.
I love that name.
Play. Yes. he wrote the play Jerusalem. It's probably his most famous play. And The River, that just starred Hugh Jackman on Broadway. But he's this very eccentric British playwright and was asked a very similar thing about, you know, he's very open about his belief that he's not creating these characters, he's not creating these stories. He, like with Jerusalem, he's talking about he wanted to write a play about England, and it ends up in it's this kind of trailer park family in Britain, and that's his play about England. And that's how he's channeling all of those ideas. And the interviewer is asking him about that process and, you know, how genuine it is to, you know, well, you still work on it all the time. And he likens it, you know, the search for inspiration. It says, well, you know, it's like you can stand out in the rain and try to catch a cold, but you don't know if you're going to.
And, I like, you know, that. Yeah.
But he says, but, you know, you wanted to show up every day,
mm-hmm.
but it just shows up when it does. And he says, I know for an absolute fact that it does not come from you.
Right. And of course, the work that the writer does as the conduit is what you did. You start out and you say, I'm going to make this work and I'm going to have plot points and I'm going to use my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that it's not working. Mm-hmm. And then you say, okay, I'm going to let this come grow more organically and let this mm-hmm. be driven by character, and the character is going to surprise me. And it's like, so that's our work, is figuring out how to position ourselves internally,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that we can be ready
mm-hmm.
to write.
And that was a huge part in developing Mammoth from its earliest stages to where it ultimately ended up being at Muck. It started as it ended up, you know, it's a 3-character play. It began as a 5-character play where it was the 3 siblings, and the character at the beginning for me. So there's Margaret, Drew, and Jeffrey. There's Margaret's the eldest of these 3 siblings who's returning home after living in England for 5 years and sort of exiling herself from what has been up until that point a pretty toxic environment. And she's returning to help her brothers sell their childhood home and kind of, you know, get what closure inevitably comes from that type of experience. As time went on, and as I got rid of extraneous characters, there was a therapist who Jeffrey saw and Margaret saw. But she was a device, you know, to serve exposition. And the character of Margaret, the sister's fiance, there's sort of a shadow of him in the play now, but in the earliest stages of it, he was there the whole time.
He came, wow.
Yeah.
I love that when you can take a piece of writing and get and pare things out, get out anything extraneous that you didn't even know was extraneous, mm-hmm. and make it still work with less and more elegantly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the real work of the craft that people don't, you can't learn that in school, I think. I mean, you can take workshops, I guess, but.
Because that's, yeah, and it's something you can really only tell yourself, you know, yeah. It's those moments where, you know, I did a workshop reading of that version of the play, and it's 120 page, 3 hour long Glory back at Geneseo. And, you know, I could see watching it, I was like, okay. Some yeah. cuts can be made.
Yeah. Playwrights out there, do staged readings of your plays. Do it.
Yes.
You learn so much.
Yes. Do them and don't rehearse them too much beforehand.
Because
if you rehearse a workshop reading, then you're not. Because it's partly the actors too who are responding to your writing.
That's true.
If you just give it the script to them, you know, it doesn't have to be a cold reading, but don't make it too crafted, because if you hand a good actor your script on day one and they go and put it in front of an audience, you will hear every line that's not landing.
Absolutely.
Because
yeah.
It should click.
One of the most painful and wonderful experiences I had was when my play was being produced with the GRRC, and I spent months with a director and actors, you know, like hearing my lines again and again. And as you know, when you first hear your work read, it's an amazing experience. Mm-hmm. And then by the 20th time that you hear everything that clanks and everything that doesn't hit the mark and the place you lost, like the thread or the logic gap, oh,
yep.
You're going to feel like, oh God, I can't believe I missed that.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, but you learn so much because there's no place to hide.
Right.
Yeah. And right. You're right. If the actors had too much time to rehearse, they could kind of like, oh, that's how that's supposed to be read.
Right. Then yeah. Especially if you're directing it, if the writer's directing it themselves.
Right.
Then you can, you know, if you're telling an actor how the line's supposed to sound,
yeah.
then the line's not doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
There should not be the question.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we were talking before the show, and I know The Mammoth is not it's not an autobiography by any means.
Right, sure.
But you said it's your sibling play, and I guess I'm curious about what this writing the play meant to you, and maybe how you, if you feel like a different person now that you've written it, if you've worked through something by writing it.
Absolutely. I remember very distinctly going through that writing process and getting it to the draft that it was when we did it at Geneseo. That was the spring of my senior year, I believe. And I had, by the time that went up on stage, I was about 5 months out of the closet. And I remember sitting there and watching Margaret and watching her journey of self-hatred to self-acceptance. And she has this monologue at the end that has not changed from draft one to the draft it is now. It's been delivered to different people. But she has a speech where she is defending a choice that she's made and just defending a relationship that she's kept, and very triumphantly says, I am not going to apologize for this anymore. And I'm not going to keep feeling guilty about this choice that I've made.
Yeah.
And there was a very distinct moment. I remember watching that play and it clicking, like, I didn't realize this was my coming out play.
Right.
But it absolutely was.
Yeah.
And I, unbeknownst to me. It was never a thought in writing that part. It was never anything that I was conscious of. But, you know, I did feel myself channeling a lot into that character and spending more time with her and spending more time with tracking each of her choices mm-hmm. and her feeling on every one of her choices. And then, and coming out and looking back on it, realizing that writing her and writing her very triumphant point A to point B, where she kind of, in an essence, comes out to her family about this particular relationship. It was therapeutic. It was retroactively therapeutic, right. I guess is the okay. way to say it.
Yeah.
So that was a really interesting moment of, you know, what we're talking about with intuition and that kind of higher state, that I was writing this play and I didn't even know what it was about until I was sitting there watching it. And it's different now. It's not that play, you know, that draft was what I needed it to be when it was mm-hmm. happening. And since then, and the rewrites it's gone through has been, I've processed a lot of growth that I've been going through by, you know, Mammoth has been sort of the checkpoint of, you know, my creative outlet when I'm going through significant change. And, you know, I've gained it in knowing that it was going to finally be produced mm-hmm. rather than workshopped, because it had just been workshopped time and again.
Yeah.
And knowing, okay, I have a finished product that I'm going to be presenting with this play, it allowed me to separate the personal from it a bit and really think about
right.
crafting it the as craft. A play.
Yeah. I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize, how much of the work is revision. I mean, you might have your first draft or a final draft in which the ideas and the feelings and the truth of the story come through you and you're like, this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you know you're on the right track, but you will still be, yeah, you'll write the one act version. You'll write the three act version.
Yeah.
You'll write the scene that wasn't in there because you need to know for the background,
yeah.
you know, backstory. You'll have 30 drafts,
mm-hmm.
you know, over a couple of months.
Yeah. And, you know, there were moments of epiphany in writing Mammoth. There's, you know,
right.
I remember brushing my teeth at my sink and looking in the mirror and having the click of, the thing that I needed to change that was going to unlock what had to happen in Act Two.
I love those moments.
And it was like,
yeah. And it's always when you're doing something mundane.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, you know, there's those moments where the little flashes appear. And that's what I find happens for me more.
Yeah.
It's not, it's just your mind is in a certain place and it is the perfect place. It's the right place at the right time yeah. for that idea to arrive. But you can't, but it's hard because you can't just, if you want to be a writer, if it's a part of who you are, which is, I certainly feel about myself, you can't just kind of sit around and wait for it.
Right.
And that's the thing that I always struggle with is I don't know how to, I haven't yet figured out how to foster that environment for those kinds of ideas because you worry that trying to do it,
right.
means that it definitely won't happen.
Right. And then trying to not try is ridiculous.
Yeah. You're just like yeah. outsmarting yourself.
Yeah, I'm going to outsmart. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, Mammoth was completely, you know, talking about believing in art and any kind of cosmic force. This was completely the right group of people in the right space. You know, for a play that has gone through such a transition and such a journey with me and has had many actors play these parts, this is absolutely the perfect product for me to have put on a stage with it. That's, I can't imagine a better group of actors, a better group of designers and a production team to have really breathe life into it for the first time. And, you know, there was a lot of intuition there. Emily, who played Margaret, I'd never seen her act before I cast her. She was a very good friend of mine, and I knew she had acted, and I knew people whose opinions I respected said spoke only highly of her, and just in my understanding of her personality, I knew this is a part that you would get. So she was cast before I'd seen her do anything.
Yeah.
And Mark Cataldi as well as Jeffrey. And Luke I had worked with a few times at Geneseo.
I would love to talk about your next play.
So it's called Girls Can Tell. And it's a play that the subject matter we're dealing with is campus sexual assault and the language that is used. And the play is going to be performed at SUNY Geneseo.
Oh.
On April 18th in the afternoon. And the plot of it follows a young man and woman, Jason and Michelle, who are two undergrads. And it's sort of two plots that we see happening concurrently, where at the opening of the play, it's the morning after they have had some sort of sexual experience at a party, and they find each other in the library, and Jason confronts her, being very uneasy and very concerned that, and he puts it to her. He asks her, was that okay? Was that, did I rape you? Is basically the question that he poses to her. And her response being, why is that up to me? You have the same exact definition of that word that I do. Why do you need me to tell you what this was? There's no reason we should disagree. And it's the last week of school. And so she kind of sets up this challenge for the two of them of, we have 1 week. We are both given the same language to talk about this. We're both given the same definitions of all of this. Our roles in the moment are different, but it is black and white. There should not be a discrepancy in what we think about that experience if we're going by the language that we're given to describe these experiences. So it follows them over the course of that final week as each of them independently come to their decision and flashes back to glimpses of the night leading up to the final scene, which will be the encounter itself.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, once again, it's going to be one night at Geneseo, April
18th. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay. And hopefully that I have a feeling that this show is going to catch fire and probably be shown more places, maybe more campuses. Knock on wood. You can follow Kate. Do you have a Facebook page or anything like that?
No, I don't have my own. I have just my own Facebook
playwright
page. I have a website.
Okay. That's good. Let's go with that.
I have a kateroyal.weebly.com.
Love Weebly.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan. All right.
Yeah.
Are you on Twitter or anything else?
No.
No? All right. Got to save time for writing. Okay. Any last words for our listeners?
Well, I think as a writer, it's you have to trust your gut. It is intuition. And just tell the stories that you need to tell and trust that you know when you arrive at those moments.
And there's your tweetable moment, people. Tweet that. Kate won't see it, but you should tweet it.
I have a Twitter, but I haven't used it in about 2 years.
Okay, well, maybe you'll start.
Maybe.
I like that a lot. All right, well, thank you for joining us on Lit Up with Nina Alvarez. Join us in a couple of weeks when Kate returns with her dramaturg, Claudia Nolan. They're going to talk about Kate's upcoming show, Girls Can Tell, and how they work together as a dramaturg and director. Last thing, there's going to be a happy hour fundraiser at the Bug Jar in Rochester, New York to benefit Rochester Free Radio. We're trying to get our studio together, get everything set up so we can be on the radio and not just online. There's no cover charge, there's free pizza, and there's a chance to score some amazing swag. So I'll be there, and that is March 27th from 5 to 8 at the Bug Jar in Rochester, New York. If you have any more questions, check out rochesterfreeradio.com/bugjar.